Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, it's a happy new year to you. My first time seeing you in the new year. How long can we continue to say happy new year?
Probably as long as you want.
How about a week or so?
Well,
anyway.
Happy new year to you, too. And happy, what is it, your 11th or 12th? Or 13th anniversary week on KBOI.
Here we go. Thank you for asking. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Wednesday, January 5th, 2022, and we continue our anniversary week, marking the start of year 12 with the radio show and the start of my 34th year on television and radio here in this Tucson market. I am absolutely blown away by hundreds of you who took the time to send along greetings and well wishes via social media this week. Without you, the listeners, none of this would be possible. The Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station is 1030 Tucson's Voice. For Trusted News Talk, it's The Voice, KVOI. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now the Ward 6 Democrat Councilman, Steve Kasachek. Happy New Year to you, Steve.
Same to you, and it is actually a little happier now than it was 10 minutes ago. You can tell, Tom, that before we went on the air here, I was grousing about the fact that I'd lost a piece of paper, and I found the piece of paper. So, no, life is good again.
Good. We can continue.
None of that makes any sense to anybody but me and Tom, but me and Tom are happy campers now.
So, is the new year off to a good start for you?
It's off to a really frustrating start, I would say. I have been really, really actively trying to figure out how to maneuver my way through a refugee resettlement situation with an individual and his wife and 2-year-old daughter. He is an Afghan refugee. He was a judge over in Afghanistan. He is now in Tucson. The judge was adjudicating Taliban and ISIS cases at Bagram Air Base, with the United States. And so the fact that he was working alongside the United States military and adjudicating terrorists and putting him in jail made him a pretty high priority target. His house was hit with a rocket-propelled grenade, and he spent 20 days in a coma. His car was bombed by Taliban. He spent 15 days in a hospital. And he was shot and left on the road for dead. He lost a kidney in that one. And when they started threatening his wife, he didn't have a daughter at the time, they moved her into Turkey for safekeeping. And he continued to cross the border into Afghanistan adjudicating these cases. And the last time he made his way across is when the government fell. And he got caught up in that evacuation that we all watched in horror on TV. Felt like I was watching Saigon again, but he is now in Tucson, and she is still stuck in Turkey. And figuring out this whole refugee resettlement thing, while now all of the prisoners that he put in prison have now been released, and this woman, and now they've got a 1.5-year-old kid over there in Turkey. I mean, she's a high priority target. And Bill, I can't even begin to describe to you how frustrating trying to figure out this whole refugee resettlement thing is. I've been on the phone with congressional people. You cannot get through to the State Department. They're unreachable and unaccountable.
Huh.
And they're the ones who hold the piece of paper in their hand that says, look, get them over here. I know we've got thousands of these, but my conversation with Mark Kelly and somebody on his staff yesterday was, look, we people are the ones who put these rules into place. When lives are at stake, and we know they are, we ought to be able to push the rules aside, get the woman and her kid on a plane, you know, Frankfurt to Heathrow to LaGuardia to Sky Harbor. We'll pick her up, and we'll figure out, you know, the rules when they get here. But if we can't save two lives, how are we going to save thousands?
Yeah, I sure hope we are able to get that family all together here in Tucson and reunited. Thank you, Steve, for your efforts on that. I know you've been working really hard on that. It's very discouraging. You look at these new numbers that came out on COVID today. We're over 1,000 cases here in Pima County again. Have you heard anything about the university? Are they going to resume in what they've been doing, the in-class, face-to-face sessions when the kids are back?
Oh, that's their intention, you know. And this whole thing has been, I can't even call it a comedy of errors. We had over 7,000 cases in the state, reported today, and 1,100 here in Pima County. They had a basketball game a couple of nights ago, and you know, people are encouraged, in quotes, to wear masks, and some are, and some aren't. The sad reality is that the U of A, and I'm just saying this, since it was an irresponsible effort to do testing in the high-rise dorms off campus, when we were seeing positivity rates north of 25% in those congregate settings, to being the last one in the parade to require vaccinations, and they're not even requiring vaccinations for all students. It's for student employees and regular employees, and so. The U of A has been asleep at the wheel on this thing since day one, in my opinion. And it's not just mine. It's lots of people who are in the community who are watching the institution invite 30,000-40,000 people back into the community and after the holidays. And, we all know what young people do on the holidays. They're going to go out and party. Omicron may not be more deadly. But the reality is that if you combine Omicron with the flu, which our flu numbers are escalating as well, and the fact that we still have Delta as a dominant strain, which is deadly, I just shudder to think about what's going to be going on in our healthcare institutions. The hospitalization rate is huge. Matt Hines made a very good point yesterday, Board of Supervisors, saying that if you need elective surgery right now in Pima County, good luck, because there probably is not going to be space available for you. So, yeah, no room at the inn in the hospitals. Our healthcare workers have been doing this for over a year and a half now. You and I talk on the phone. We're not sitting here in full PPE garb with people who are suffering COVID, across the room from us. But our healthcare workers have been. That's doctors, it's nurses, it's techs, it's radiologists, it's LPNs, it's physical therapists. And they're in these settings every single day. The city of Tucson has a mask mandate in place right now, and we still have, a few hundred employees who are claiming this either medical or religious exemption. There are very few legitimate medical exemptions. The only real legitimate one is if you have had an allergic reaction to this or a similar vaccine. You could probably count the number of city employees on one hand who really can legitimately claim that. The religious exemptions, I've already had a conversation with our city manager and city attorney, and my position is that these are not exemptions, these are accommodations. And there's a distinction there. And if it comes to the point where the city determines that either the cost or the workflow, the impact on the employer, is such that we can't accommodate that anymore, then we may have to do away with those religious accommodations. And I'd be all for that. Every single major world religion leader has come out and said it is the ethical thing to do to get a vaccination. We're in a world pandemic. And so if you sense some frustration in my voice about these people who are saying my liberty trumps your health, there is a frustration in it, and I totally support the vaccination mandate, and will completely support eliminating the religious accommodation to make sure that every single person that comes in contact with a city employee, including their coworkers, is as safe as they can be. This Omicron thing is just no joke. And you started out by saying we had over 1,100 new cases. We've had over 3,200 people die in Pima County.
Yeah, it's very sad. How about some good news about Mona's Danish Bakery, Steve Kasachek? They had a great holiday season. I'm very happy for them. And I hope you were able to get some pastries over the holidays and get a little holiday cheer as well.
Absolutely. And while during the break, I'd like you and Tom to sit down and calculate how many calories you ingested from Mona's over the holidays.
I don't know if I want to think about that. I'll judge that probably in the amount of pounds that I put on it over that 2-week period.
It's all good. You could set a New Year's resolution: lose 22 pounds in 2022.
Okay.
Sounds like a goal.
Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Steve and the team, they're open right now for lunch. Open at 6:30 for your breakfast, and they do a great breakfast. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. And again, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Find out what all the excitement's about. Steve and the team are ready to welcome you at Mona's and maybe have a beautiful Danish croissant. I love that Danish coffee cake as well as the Kringle. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. And this is Bill Buckmaster. It's anniversary week, celebrating the start of year 12 here on the radio with the radio show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Let's go back now for our newsmaker interview on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Ward 6, Democrat Steve Kasacek. Steve, new leadership in two very important roles here in town, a new police chief within the ranks, and a new leader at Visit Tucson, again, within the ranks and the team of Visit Tucson. Your thoughts?
Oh, I think that we, as a community, knocked it out of the park in both cases, and I'll take them in reverse order. Francisco Garcia, he is, I advocated several years ago that we try and poach him from Brent Durad and bring him over as our economic development leader in the city of Tucson. And he wanted to stick with Visit Tucson. I think that the guy's a rock star. I think he does a great job. He's well connected internationally. He's just a real effervescent guy and is really personable. So I think Visit Tucson is really, really well represented with him in the saddle. And the transition is going to be minimal, if any, because he's been with the organization for so long, and I'm absolutely certain that all of his coworkers and staff are completely supportive, and there's no pushback against that at all. Chad Kazmar, our new police chief, I am really gratified that the council did not say, well, let's go out and do a national search. Chad is a local guy. He has grown up in the community. He has grown up in the department. He's worked in multiple different areas of the department, most recently over in the 911 center, doing the rearrangement with that. We just did construction over there, expanded it. We're combining police and fire, and so he oversaw that whole thing. And I'm absolutely certain that the leadership team within TPD and the rank and file, the officers, are going to support him as well. Chad's really personable. He's out in the community, and what people will be seeing is him making the rounds in the first 6 months, reconnecting with the community and listening. He's not going to go out there and say this is the way it's going to be done, my way or the highway. He's going to be going around and listening to neighbors and listening to business people and saying, what are your concerns and what are your priorities? So I think they're both just top drawer, and I'm really pleased and happy for the community that we have people like that willing to step up and take the bull by the horns and say we're going to continue these organizations in a good direction.
What are you hearing about primetime Tucson tourism this winter, Steve Kasacek?
It was going okay until Omicron hit. It was everything was sort of on the upswing. We have a scaled down gem show. The Fourth Avenue Street Fair did their thing on a scaled down version. We have had shows happening in Centennial Hall and TCC, but everything sort of got that asterisk next to it, saying we're not quite back yet, but what we want to open the doors and invite people in. The hotel room rates were heading back up again, and then Omicron hit, and so we're all kind of watching right now to see what the impact is going to be. The medical experts are saying mid to late January should be the peak, and we should start to see a decline. But haven't we heard that all that before? A year I could do a newsletter each week, and in January, the first week in January of 2021, I showed a picture of the risk factors nationwide, and everything was in red. About the beginning of summer, everything was looking really good, and things were starting to open up again. And here we are again, first of the year, and it's back to red again. So, so to your question, yeah, things were going pretty well. Asterisk, and then Omicron hits, and so now we're all kind of sitting back and watching to see what the impact is going to be. But from an economic development standpoint, we gotta get this behind us. And again, I hate to say a broken record alert, but that's the reason people have got to get vaccinated. They, as long as there is an unprotected target, the virus is going to find it. And my concern is that we get a combination Omicron Delta, the thing mutates again, and then you've got a super contagious, highly deadly variant that maybe our vaccines don't take care of. So everybody get a vaccination. Let's just get this behind us.
Yeah, we really do need to get it behind us, and hopefully the signs are good as far as Omicron. It peaked in South Africa after about a month. The word out of London is that it's peaking now in the United Kingdom, and I hope it will be peaking here, as you say, in mid-January, maybe at the earliest, and hopefully by January it will be in the rearview mirror. Steve, I want to ask you about this, the major issue that a lot of people see here in town. Do you think it is the issue with law enforcement? What do you see as the major issue as we plunge into this new year?
From a policy standpoint?
Yes.
Well, we have a really crime. Everybody looks at the crime statistics, but that's nationwide, and we're in an actively hiring situation. We have academies in place, and we've got the new police chief in place. Not that Magnus did a bad job, but after a while, some fresh eyes, is a good thing. I think the most important regional decision that we have to face right now is the one that the mayor and council and the RTA are looking at, and that is whether or not the city of Tucson continues as a member jurisdiction with the Regional Transportation Authority. And I know they're one of your longtime sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a really robust conversation going on with the RTA literally for months, and now we have a deadline in front of us. The council voted back, I think it was in November, to say if by February 1st, which is a few weeks away, we don't see some changes, then we may have to go it alone. We, the council, have two meetings in January. The RTA has one more, and I am really hoping that the RTA changes some of the representation, changes some of the funding of remaining Tucson projects, and front loads some of our underfunded ones to the first part of the next RTA. Or it's going to be difficult to justify to our taxpayers that even though we are over 50% of the regional tax base and population base, we're not represented that way on the PAG council or the RTA council. So that, I think, is a really important decision regionally, and it's right on top of us because the reason for the February 1st deadline was not just an arbitrary let's just pick a date. It's that the city of Tucson has a half-cent sales tax that we've been collecting for the last 5 years, and 40% of that goes to road repair. That half-cent sales tax sunsets on June 30th of this year, and so we have to call an election to ask the voters whether or not they want to extend that road repair sales tax. If so, for how long? If so, how much? Is it a quarter cent? Is it a full penny? Is it still a half cent? And so we had to draw a line to say, if we're going back to the voters, it's got to be this spring, so we don't have a gap in our funding. So we're kind of juggling those balls at the same time. What are we going to do with the RTA? What are we going to do with Prop 101? And from a timing standpoint, it's on top of us. So policy-wise, I think that's probably the most important regionally. But you're correct; crime is always an issue, and I think we got our arms around that as well.
Another issue, and I am running out of time, but one to keep an eye on will be the relationship between Pima County and the city of Tucson. And in my 34 years here. Celebrating the start of year 34 here in the media, this has always been a roller coaster ride, Steve.
Yeah, it is. And I was on the phone with both Rex Scott and Sharon Bronson yesterday just to keep communication lines open. I think that it is important for the city and the county to demonstrate to the public that we have the capacity to work together collaboratively and that we're not just two teams litigating against each other. So I am working with both of those two and Nikki Lee on the council. We'll be putting together agenda items to the goal of which is to set up a regional collaboration on how we use the federal dollars for broadband to reach regionally, and so that we're not doing that independently of one another. I think broadband's an important issue, but I think the more important issue is the one that you're mentioning, and that is to demonstrate to the public that these two governing bodies, the two major ones in the region, can still work together, and that we're just not we're just not drawing lines in the sand and not able to call and talk to one another.
I would agree wholeheartedly. Are those poles still going up all over town? The towers?
The 5G poles are going up, but here's the good news. We'll end it on a piece of good news, is that every single one of them that have gone up since we put our utility manual into place back in November, every single one of them has been a co-location with an existing power pole or streetlight.
So, wow. Good news.
Yeah, it is. And so Verizon, kudos to Verizon and to AT&T for stepping up and saying, okay, we get it. You don't want these things in your front yard anymore. We'll find a street light to put it on. So good for them.
Good. That's the first I had heard of that. Steve Kasachek, thank you very much. I hope we have a good year here. Thank you, Steve.
I do too, and congratulations on the anniversary. That 34 years. That that's quite a testament to your professionalism and to the fact that you can keep listeners and that you can keep sponsors.
Thank you very much, Steve. Have a great day.
You take care.
All right, Buckmaster, midway point of our midweek edition, even though it feels like a Tuesday, doesn't it? Because we were off Monday. Anyway, the Mexico Border Report is next with Keith Rosenblum.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. One of the many things I love about Green Things are the knowledgeable people that work there. In other words, you'll go in there today and say, you know, I hear roses are supposed to be cut back in January, or is it February? What's the deal on roses when they're supposed to be cut back? The people at Green Things could easily handle that question and a lot of others. As we really get into the wintertime, this is the time to start thinking about some color in the garden for springtime already. 3384 East River Road. They are open daily. They're right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. And when you're there on their beautiful 13-acre site, stop by Zocalo Village. They've got some great merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. All right, the Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we devote a half an hour to what we call the Border Report, and it's hosted by longtime border reporter Keith Rosenblum. He worked at the Arizona Republic and the Arizona Daily Star covering Mexico, and he also worked for Congressman Jim, not the late Congressman Jim Colby, but Jim's still very much alive, Keith Rosenblum. Hey, Keith, how are you? You with us?
Hello, Bill. Okay. Actually, you were... What you meant was he just was tardy all the time. He was never punctual.
There you go. Keith, first of all, my condolences to you and the Rosenblum family. The matriarch of the family has passed away. You were back in Evanston, Illinois, my neck of the woods. I grew up in the next town north of Evanston, Wilmette, Illinois. But you were back, and my condolences to the loss of your mother.
You know what? We had a beautiful send-off, 96. Western medicine can do great things for people until it can't, and keeps you probably on earth a lot longer than you want to be. Mm-hmm. And that was the case with my mom, but she left with all of her kids intact and good vibes, even if she wasn't quite herself. I'm not sure she knew who we were at the end or even who she was, but it was a learning experience for everybody, and it makes you appreciate life in and of itself, regardless of the cognizance, we'll say, of the person who has it.
How did Evanston look to you? I sometimes reflect on the fact, what if I had not come out to the University of Arizona in 1965? What if I'd gone to Northwestern and stayed in the Midwest? How did Evanston look to you?
Well, you would have been a happier man and a more fulfilled man had you stayed there.
Oh, thank you, Keith. That's great.
And I noticed as I was walking the streets, 200,000 people, 250,000 in Evanston and Wilmette. It's still just kind of like a borough, like a little suburb of Evanston. It's very much going into, I feel like I'm in movies. I feel like I'm watching part of Risky Business or Ordinary People, that beautiful movie with, Mary Tyler Moore, I think. It's suburban. It's such a different world than Tucson.
Yes.
It's a world where you're not prisoner of an automobile. Distances are right there. You don't need a car. In fact, you don't want a car. And it has seasons, and I so miss the seasons. I think anybody who comes out here does. And that's why we try to sneak up to either Mount Lemmon or to Flagstaff or to Silver City, New Mexico.
Yes.
To enjoy what are actually some seasons. But it also gives you an appreciation for the rest of the U.S., how people live. And then it also gives you an enormous appreciation for Mexico. I was in parts of the city where you might as well be in Mexico. And, in fact, I was listening today to President Lopez Obrador for the 780th time. Well, not, I haven't caught all of them, but this is his 780th press conference today. And today, once again, as he does all the time, he thanks the Mexicans in the U.S. whose remittances to Mexico this year exceeded all other years, I believe, and are now $50 billion. It's something that goes beyond it.
It's
as if, that's right, the sums are so vast that we forget about it, and López Obrador understands that that's what helps keep the peso as stable or as strong as it is, what keeps the country as buoyant as it is, because you have this source of richness that comes from all of the Mexicans, documented, undocumented, long-term, short-term, who go over to Western Union or MoneyGram or use their ability to Zoom to send money online. And I know this because we do it as well, and I've helped plenty of people do it. But it is another, it's talk about a clean industry. It's people just sending money from the United States and Canada to Mexico. And their diaspora, if you want to call it that, the Mexican diaspora, if the country's 125 million people, it's diaspora, that is people living abroad and many of them sending money back home, is probably 20 million people. And so that's a big source of wealth for them.
Yeah, and I wonder what percentage would that be of their annual budget in Mexico, that kind of money?
I think we could figure it out because you have the sources of Mexico's income, the gross domestic product are the oil industry, so Pemex. It is the tourism industry, which is huge, as you know, as a tourist in Mexico. And then it is a tourism, Pemex. Oh, industry is huge, and the maquiladora industry, of course, which is, you know, we'll just lump that into the rest of the industry. And then these remittances, I believe, because as long as you ask the question, it's one of those things I happen to know. I believe the remittances are the second source of income behind Pemex.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. So I had no idea.
Arcane questions, you'll get arcane answers.
Yeah, I had no idea. You alluded to the fact that things we really didn't know a month ago when we were talking to you about the holiday season for Mexican tourists coming up to Tucson. Was it kind of mediocre or average, or what are you hearing?
Well, what I witnessed, I don't hear anything, so I ignore all people when they tell me things. But what I was able to witness was a couple of days where it was crowded, but I can tell you there were not nearly the number of license plates from Sonora, Chihuahua, Sinaloa, Baja in Tucson or in Phoenix. Not nearly the number. And I can and the other metric here is how long Keith had to wait in line, because I am not like yourself. I'm not a trusted traveler. Not trusted in any area. But when I come to the U.S., I do not get the sentry line or the trusted one where you just go, you know, it's a 5-minute breeze through. I actually have to wait with everybody else.
Wow.
Up to an hour, 2 hours, however long the line happens to be. And this year, Keith did not do any waiting at all. I waited 2 hours of maybe the 20 times I've crossed. The rest of them were just right on through and very nice to see. It'd be interesting to see with our police chief now at the helm of CBP, how things change, if at all, from the previous administration. But Chris Magnus, now installed at Customs and Border Protection, goes from the head of Tucson Police Department, which I think is 800 officers now, to an agency that has, I believe it's like 55,000. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you that there's anything. I'll let you know. When I come through, if there's any kind of philosophical approach, what I can say is that what the Mexicans have done, I should say the Nogales Mexico people have done, is to have on their side, they've been moving traffic in such a way that the waits are actually a lot less. They have city police now who are guiding people. You're kind of waiting in line, and you go to the first open gate. I can say the traffic moved a lot faster anyway in the 20, 30 times that I've crossed as a vehicle. The other times I've been crossing as a pedestrian. You can't control it the same way you can control traffic, but the waits haven't been long at all.
We were down in Tubac for my birthday last month. On the way back, as you know.
Congratulations on being an octogenarian. Is that the word?
No. No. We won't go there. But let's just say 34 years now this week in this market on TV and radio. So there you go. And 12 years starting the radio show this week, beginning our 12th year. But Keith, I wanted to say that the border checkpoint at just north of Tubac, You know, you just breeze through, and there's a guy that's got DEA, and he's on his bulletproof vest. What is the deal there? I mean, it looked like they weren't stopping anybody.
They're not. It's one of those. It really is. I mean, look, they do grab every so often. They'll get something, a big ticket item, like somebody who's painted their own FedEx truck and tried to bring drugs through. But really, it's a. And I've seen. I go through. I can take the vans all the time, so I get off as well. With a lot of the Mexicans who go through the van, because the vans, you have to get off the entire out of the vehicle, show your papers, and get back on. They don't do that with most of the other people who are in vehicles. I would say one out of every 20 or 30 cars actually goes to a secondary checkpoint. I consider it a total waste of time, and it really is. Those agents should not be there. It's a huge apparatus. It's a big infrastructure cost, and you already know it's there. But what that means is if you actually have methamphetamines to cross, or you're going to cross with your family members who are undocumented, you're going to go do it anyway along the Santa Cruz River or into the mountains there. Why would you go through the checkpoint? It's just there as a symbolic, a very costly symbolic thing, and the people of Tubac generally hate it.
Yeah.
And when I was working for Jim Colby, Jim said that thing should not be there, and he kept keeping the funding for making it permanent, which was great. Ultimately, when Jim goes out of office, I think the first day he's out of office, it's made permanent and, you know, introduced all those things. And the very peculiar reasoning of our law enforcement was, well, we already have stations like that in Texas and New Mexico and California, ergo, we must do it in Arizona as well. It was kind of like, you know, I have to keep spanking a child because I've spanked him before. It made no sense. It was without ration. It was very much an Alice in Wonderland. To me, it's an Alice in Wonderland waste of money.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I asked.
But it's there, and it's a deterrent to nothing.
All right. We're going to pause right here, talk about Silver City after we take the break. Keith Rosenblum on our monthly border report. Back with you in a moment.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We were talking at the beginning of our border report with Keith Rosenblum about Silver City. And for those who come from back east, maybe you'd like to experience the four seasons. Silver City would be a great getaway to kind of really get a taste of winter without the extremeness of winter. Silver City, 3-hour drive from Tucson, not bad at all. Lots to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Actually, this is pretty good hiking weather over there. Midday temperatures in the mid-50s. Boy, that's actually almost perfect to get out and about. Find out more about Silver City, where to stay, what to do, by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Just spell it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Matt has called us on the live line and would like to speak with Keith Rosenblum, our border reporter. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, Keith. A couple things. Real quickly, the ambassador to Mexico did an op-ed in the Arizona Republic just recently that, you know, basically, you know, relayed the relationship between the United States and Mexico, but it put a big, thank you to Arizona with its relationship to Sonora standing out as really a unique relationship, and gave a lot of kudos going back to, you know, the first time the Arizona-Mexico Commission, I guess, started back in the 40s. Second thing, if you could comment on that. Second thing, real quickly, my nephew was in Rocky Point. He said that there was a huge power outage that actually caused them to have to cut their trip short. So I was curious if you had any news about how their power situation is going. And San, I want to say San Carlos, but had a huge thing in the Arizona Daily Star talking about the wastewater treatment situation affecting all the tourist homes in San Carlos. And just any thoughts on that, too. Thanks. Bye.
Sure. Let me, in order of those things, first of all, the Arizona-Mexico Commission, I believe, is 1956. With Governor Fannin at that time, mm-hmm. and Governor Alvaro Obregón from Sonora, and it is it's because it's international. It has no teeth, right? But people get together anyway. There's the Arts Committee, the Sports Committee, the Politics Committee. It can't do anything because you can't supersede the role of the federal governments on either side. But it's great to get together and to chat, and it's held up all the time as an exemplary model for the border. They do. There is a Baja and California Commission. There's a New Mexico Commission, and there's a Texas, there's six Mexican border states, so Texas borders a couple of them. There are those commissions, but none of them are quite as effective, and part of it's because of the family relationships. There's so many families from Sonora who live in Arizona and have family here. And I saw the op-ed to which you're alluding, which is by Esteban Moctezuma, who is the Mexican ambassador, and that was cool that the Arizona Republic gave him the space. I didn't think there was a great PR piece. I didn't. If you know Mexico, you wouldn't learn anything from it, but it was still nice to see. And he did. You're right. He did highlight the relationship between Sonora and Arizona, which should be done. To Mexico infrastructure things, which is the two issues that you bring up, and I'll lump them together. The power. Mexico sometimes doesn't know if she's first world or third world, and so you do wind up with these. We also have that trouble. As we did in Texas, and we have from time to time as well with power outages. I don't know the source of that one, but the Mexican power system, the grid, there's two grids. There's the Baja grid, which strangely enough includes, it does not include Peñasco. Peñasco, I believe, is on the mainland grid, and then the Baja grid is smaller. But it's not unusual to have those. They're probably a little more frequent than they are in the U.S., but they're just downers. I didn't realize it was for that long a period of time that people would have had to leave for that reason, but I think it's rare, at least in Sonora. By the way, the Mexicans pay about 50% more per kilowatt hour than we do, and
really?
That's one of the things that's a bummer for industry. Yeah, it's a very graduated scale with subsidies for the poor, but as a general rule, if you can skirt electricity, you know, when you have in industry, you want to try it. You want to use gas or some other source. And then to San Carlos and to Guaymas and its sewage leak, it's gross. It's just gross, but it's also what American cities, it's what you, when you don't spend money on infrastructure when you ought to, and you can count on the fact that Mexico is paying a price with its, not just with American tourists. Americans are the least of the complainers. The Mexicans themselves are grossed out just as we would be. So I'm familiar with the story. It was in the Daily Star, and it's still a rarity. I have my best friend from high school, from Evanston Township High School, Evanston, Illinois, lives in San Carlos, and so he's on the phone with me whenever there's a power outage, whenever there's a, just to whine. He has no one else that will listen to him whining. But I figure if the cost of living in Mexico, where everything else is about a third the price of what it is in the U.S., if you can have medical care that's great and all these other things, I guess giving up a day or two out of the year because of infrastructure failures is probably worth it. But even those, I think they're taken care of.
Yeah, the pictures in the Star were really gross indeed. Does that polluted water then go into the Gulf? Is that the deal?
I don't know. They're pretty good. You know, Mexico is one of the leaders. This is one of the odd things. Mexico is a signatory to all these environmental compacts in the world. And Mexico's a leader in a lot of areas. And I would actually, there's a bunch of areas where the Mexicans do things for visual, sound, and water and contamination that we don't do. They're very thorough, and they have they follow the EPA on all sorts of things. There was a time where Mexico, you just dumped things, you know, toxic residue into their ponds or into their rivers or, you know, into their landfills, and it doesn't happen any longer. And I can tell you that. I'm not saying that it doesn't ever happen, but I would say that the incidence is about the same as it is in the U.S. Now, when you have Google Maps and you have inspectors who are well-educated, they're engineers themselves, you have a really good auditing of industry and of people. So my guess is all these gross things we're talking about are accurate, but they're less and less, and one day it'll be on parity with the same gross things that we have here.
All right, I've got about 40 seconds, and we'll probably pick up on this maybe next month's border report. The supply chain issue, will that benefit Mexico as companies decide maybe to move to the border?
You sucked up my 40 seconds. Yes. And also President López Obrador yesterday announced huge port improvements at the Port of Guaymas, which means, guess what? If you look at these lines at Long Beach and L.A.
Right.
And
yep.
Up to Seattle, guess who might just fill in some of those voids?
Glad I asked the question. Keith Rosenblum, all the best to you and your family. Thank you very much, Keith.
My pleasure.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show as our anniversary week continues. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, Bill Buckmaster with you, and looking forward to what's coming up right after CBS News. Dave Ramsey, it's always a very entertaining couple of hours, 3 hours actually, right here on KVOI, talking about your money. Hope you have a great afternoon. Stay safe.